So once one accepts that engagement with fiction involves the imagination, or at least does not involve centrally the belief system, a philosophical problem which arises is to explain if and why these imaginative representations one constructs in this fiction context have or have not identical affective consequences to belief representations. So a portable formulation of the philosophical problem would be the following: does imagining episodes in a fiction context, like in reading fiction, in fiction viewing, does imagining episodes in a fiction context and believing the same episodes out of a fiction context trigger the same emotional mechanisms? So to my knowledge, no philosophers endorse the view that the affective consequences of fiction and of facts belong to an entirely different category of mental states, or that these emotional responses to fiction and to fact would constitute different type of emotional responses. This is what I call the discontinuity view between fiction and fact, relatively to the emotional responses. And actually, I believe most philosophers endorse a kind of similarity view on this. They claim that the same or similar emotional mechanisms are triggered in the imagined condition and in the belief condition, in the fiction condition and in the fact condition. So this is a similarity view. So you have the discontinuity view, which is, I believe, not held by any philosophers. And you have the similarity view, which is held by the majority of philosophers on this. But in between both views, in between the discontinuity view and the similarity view, one finds philosophers like me and others who share the intuition that there must be some differences between affective consequences of fiction and affective consequences of facts. So according to these in-between philosophers, these differences do not motivate to endorse a discontinuity view between emotional responses to fiction and to facts. But still, these differences, the intuition of these differences, may motivate to introduce at least a special vocabulary on this and motivate to speak of quasi-emotion in one case, in the fiction context, and of emotions tout court in the other case, in the non-fiction context. So the drawback of this use of the quasi-vocabulary in this context is that it, in some ways, it enables philosophers to suggest that there is a difference between emotional responses towards fiction and emotional responses toward real content, but without committing themselves to a control of the quasi-modification. By remaining neutral on the meaning of quasi in quasi-emotions, the in-between philosophers leave open very different readings of the prefix quasi, and this prefix could mean either modified, so emotions towards fiction would be quasi in the sense that they would be just modified relatively to real emotions. But the quasi prefix could also mean fake emotions or even imaginary emotions. And this equivocity, this variety of interpretations of the prefix quasi, especially the interpretations of quasi as fake or as imaginary, may explain why so many philosophers reject the quasi-emotion hypothesis and endorse the similarity view on this. So in this talk, Pascal and I we will suggest that a plausible construal of quasi in quasi-emotion is quasi-personal. The quasi-personal emotion view was not actually our initial view in the project. It is nonetheless, I believe, a clear cousin of our initial view. Our initial view on this, that is in 2012, was a newcomer in the philosophical literature on quasi-emotion, as in the cognitive literature on emotion. The initial view, we called it the semantic emotion hypothesis in 2012. So according to the semantic emotion hypothesis, emotional experiences of fictional scenes would disengage the episodic memory system and would be mainly modulated by semantic circuits in the frontotemporal areas of the brain. So on that basis, we called emotions in 2012, we called emotions towards fictions semantic emotions. So even so, up to now, so in 2016, we have not been in a position to test as such the semantic emotion hypothesis. Still, our experimental data and the quasi-personal emotion view that which is, will be presented today are more and more in resonance one with another. And so the quasi-personal view, which will be presented today, is very much in resonance with the semantic emotion hypothesis we proposed, we suggested in 2012. And the common denominator in both views is that, we have the intuition that this is a self-memory system's peculiar engagement in quasi-emotion, which is pivotal in the explanation. So it's true that the data that will be presented today are not the final data on this. Research on this will continue to develop in the next months. So this conference marks the official end of the fiction project, not the end of the research we will conduct on this.
The fact that we can experience some mental states and also emotion in fiction, for example, reading a book or watching fictive scenes, is a common sense. But the mechanism of such emotion are controversial, and so the aim of the fiction project was to investigate these mechanisms using experimental methods. Indeed, if you see this scene as real, you see this. Perhaps you have emotion. Now, imagine you see this scene, but as fictive. And probably your emotion is not the same in the two scenes. So, the question here was, how can we get emotionally involved in fiction? So, are emotions real in fiction? And if so, do they result from self-projection? In fact, Abraham was the first researcher who questioned the difference between reality and fiction using neuroimaging. And she asked participants to make judgments about real real things or fictive things. For example, a judgment about George Bush or judgment about Cinderella. And she compared the neural basis of such judgment in the two cases. And she found differences in the two cases. In the real condition, she found some regions like anterior prefrontal cortex or precuneus. And in the fictive condition, she saw inferior frontal gyrus. Interestingly, the anterior regions and the precuneus are involved in the self-referential processes, and inferofrontal gyrus is involved in semantic processing. So Abraham proposed some hypotheses to explain her results, and she proposed that the real fiction is a condition where there is self-projection and episodic memory, and this projection makes the difference and explain the difference between the regions, the brain region, between George Bush judgment and Cinderella judgments. There are some limits in this study. For example, we can't judge, but the material was very different between the two conditions. And also, there is no direct comparison in the paper between these two conditions. So we can make the hypothesis that another way to explain these differences, it could be a self-projection, but it could be also another process which we can call the emotion regulation. So that in a real condition, we have an intense emotion, and when we saw fictive condition, we have down regulation of emotion. So indeed, concerning self-projection, we know very well the cerebral network which is involved. For example, here we have a different example. For example, we have the cerebral region involved in remembering, in prospection, in theory of mind, which is a prospection in over. We have also in the middle results from our team where we ask people to project in the past and also to project themselves in the future. And we compare the cerebral bases of the two periods. There are the same cerebral bases, the same as the other self-projection, so medial regions and precuneus and medial prefrontal cortex, but we saw also some differences between the two, and in the future there was a region involved in semantic processing. More recently, we compare the cerebral bases of different kind of self-projection based on autobiographical material, so we explore this material and the reactivation of the region during this self-material based on a different kind of level of abstraction. We begin with episodic memories and then with semantized memories, so generic memories, and thereafter for self-judgment, self-concepts. And we saw a disengagement of limbic processes and hippocampus with the level of abstraction. And for the most abstract level, we have only the medial prefrontal cortex. So it is an important question for thereafter, for our project, to see that self-projection is not the similar things as episodic memory. It can also involve a different kind of level of abstraction. So there is another study of Abraham who explore her hypothesis that the real fiction depends on self-relevance, self-projection. So she compared using the same protocol, she compared different kinds of self-relevance. She called high self-relevance when the subject of the judgment were friends or family members, or medium relevance when there was famous people, and low relevance when the subject of the experiment was a fictional character. So we can see here that we have a disengagement also of the medial prefrontal cortex and precuneus as function of self-relevance. So this result is another argument for to tell that the real fiction to interpret the difference between reality and fiction is to interpret in function of a gradient of self-relevance. So It is to note that she wasn't interested by emotion in these studies. But so there is a more recent study by Mokaiber and her team, and he asked people to make emotional judgment when they saw images, very negative images. They were extracted from the YAPS. So she analyzes the data with fMRI, and she noticed that in reality condition there was some activation in regions which are well known in emotional processing, like amygdala and also insula. And in contrast, in the fictional condition, the activation were not in this region, but there is another region involved in prefrontal region, which are also known to be involved in semantic processing. So this paper could be in accordance with our first hypothesis that in reality we have real and self relevant emotion, but in fictional condition we have more semantic state and perhaps semantic processing of emotion. So our first objective was to test emotion response toward fiction or reality and the modulatory role of self-relevance. Because I don't say, but Mokaiber's study did not explore self-relevance in a study. So we have two main hypotheses. First, we thought to observe a reduction of emotional response elicited by scene present as a fictional compared to real scene due to downregulation in fiction condition and a greater intensity of the emotion response for scene associated with self-relevant regardless of fictional or real scenes. So we proposed to a group of 20 subjects, two groups of 20 subjects, some short scenes of a few seconds, and one group was cued by fiction condition. He know that it was perceived so real scene, and the other group was cued by fiction, so he thought to see a fictive scene. And we record electrodermal response, and after the experiment, we show another time all the scene, and this time we ask the people to make subjective ratings of the intensity of emotion for each scene and also of self-relevance of each scene. I show you some examples of these scenes. So this is the neutral condition. This is the negative condition. And this is the positive condition. So here are the results. We look at the electrodermal response results, and as we can see, we have an effect of emotion. The response were greater for emotional material than neutral. So we have recorded good electrodermal response, but unfortunately, we didn't see any difference between fictive and real material. So we can think that this is a kind to record implicit emotional response, and so we can conclude that there is no differences, implicit differences in emotion when you see fictive or real material. But concerning subjective emotion, so here we see the intensity. So we have a difference this time. We have a difference, same as electrodermal response, neutral is less intense than emotional material, but interestingly, we see that here, for the negative material in the fictive condition, the intensity is lower than in the real condition. So the negative scenes are judged less intense in fictive conditions. So we can conclude that perhaps we have a down-regulation of emotion when we are face of fictive material. And indeed, here we look at the self-relevance, you know. Here you have the self-relevance for the negative scenes and here for the positive scenes. So for the positive scene, as we can see, as the self-relevance increase, we have also the intensity of emotion that increase. And we can observe that for very high self-relevance, we have no more difference between fictive and real material. Most interestingly, for negative scenes, we saw that for self-relevance, there is no difference, you know. It is always very intense, and never mind the self-relevance when it is real. But when it is fictive, we saw here that when the self-relevance is more important, here we have an intensity in emotion, we become more important. So we can conclude that self-relevance is a main factor that determines the intensity of emotion on fictive condition, and perhaps only for negative material. So indeed, we saw this up-regulation here only for the down-regulation of the fiction on negative material, and we also saw upregulation, whatever the valence, but also for the fictive condition, only for the negative, enfin, more for the negative than for the positive material. So we have an interim conclusion that we do have real emotion in fiction because the skin conductance results show that we have response like in reality condition. However, we can also suppose that the emotion is less intense in fiction, so we suggest that when confronting with fiction, some kind of implicit emotional control, so down-regulation process, resulting perhaps by cognitive change due to knowledge of the fictional nature of the stimulus, will take place, resulting in a weaker subjective emotional response. However, which is important, stimuli that elicit self-relevance in both conditions, either fictive or real condition, can prompt emotional upregulation. So, to go further, we develop a second study. The objective of the second study was to test emotional response toward fiction and reality and the modulatory role of executive function to see if it was involved in down regulation and self-relevance, like the first study. So our three main hypotheses were that we expect that extrinsic and incidental reappraisal strategy toward material, so it was priming by fictive versus real context, will attenuate the emotional impact of unpleasant pictures. So we thought also that the impact of fiction will depend on executive control strategies, and that impact of fiction will be attenuated or dependent by self-relevance, like in the first study. So this time we use another material. It was images, picture, very negative picture, like Mokaber study. This picture were from the YAPS. So we ask people to see this picture, but before there were there are Q prime by short sentences that give a context, implicit context, and this implicit context was ever so fictive or ever real. For example, it was a body of an injured man or body injury makeup of a man. And so after the participants saw the picture, and he must go, must feel emotion. So he has no task to do when he saw the picture. All the pictures were counterbalanced, so each picture was so in the fictive condition or in the real condition. Also, we recorded electrodermal skin, and thereafter, at debriefing, we recorded subjective emotional response and also self-relevance response. And also, we give to the people an extra battery of executive function. So we test three processes which are important in executive function: inhibition, updating in working memory, and also flexibility with a standard test of neuropsychology. Here are the results. So similarly than the first study, we didn't observe the differences using skin conductance between fiction and real. And like the first study, we show a difference with subjective emotional scale. Indeed, we saw that emotional intensity was greater for real condition than for fictive condition. This was very significant. We try to split the group of subject in two. So we take the good regulator and the bad regulator. A bad regulator was a people who has no difference or little difference between emotion in a fictive condition and in real condition. A good regulator was a people who has a great difference between the two conditions for emotional intensity. Sorry. So here you have difference, and we show that the good and bad regulator were different only for one executive function, which is very interesting because it's the Stroop test, and the Stroop test is a score of inhibition. So the results suggest that the good regulator can download their emotion because they can inhibit their emotion, and the bad regulator have no difference of emotion between the two conditions because they cannot have inhibition of their emotion. After we look at the self-relevance, and another time for the self-relevance, there was no difference between the two conditions for using electrodermal response. But using a subjective scale, we saw a very good relationship between the subjective relevance and the subjective emotional intensity, as you can see here. And interestingly, there was no difference in this relationship between fictive and real condition. So, other point which is important, there was no correlation between self-relevance and executive function. So only correlation between subjective intensity and executive function, as I show you. In conclusion, we can propose that emotion regulation in fiction is dependent of a dual process involving down and up regulation. We could be independent. Indeed, one process is related to executive function, most especially inhibition. And the other process is related to self-projection, so they determine emotion up-regulation. And so if we analyze this dual process, we can determine that the difference between perceiving fiction or real depends finally on emotional regulation, cognitive processes, and self-projection. The more self-projection is, and there is no difference between fiction and real, and the more executive function is activated when seeing fictive processes, the more there is differences between fiction and real. Also, the less there is self-projection in fiction, and the more you have differences between fictive and real. So we have 2 minutes? Yes, okay. So this result is particularly interesting for clinical interest in psychiatric disease, where there is differences, the difficulty of perception of reality and non-reality, illusion. So it can be interesting to work with psychiatric disease and propose remediation technique using this kind of protocol. And tomorrow, Tiziana show you some results in autism. And for the perspective, we have some perspective. First, we want to have other measures of emotion, and using EEG, using, for example, fMRI. Also, we think that it will be interesting to have other analyses more precise of self-relevance. In fact, in the first study, the self-relevance concerns memories, personal memories. In the second study, it concerns self-concepts, importance that the fiction has for the participants. So we show that the two can have the same impact on the fictive process. But it could be interesting to contrast in the same experiment different kind of self-relevance from phenomenology to self-concept, for example, to see if there is difference. Also, here it is perception. We didn't study imagination, so it will be interesting to do the same kind of experiment, but asking imagination and not perception. It will be also interesting to contrast different kind of material. Here we use films, but it could be interesting to use books, for example, stories in books. And also, it will be interesting to look at more ecological paradigms and also narrative context. So I present, the last study we carried out in the laboratory. So we asked people to go to Avengers. They go to Avengers, and after they were asked to participate on a questionnaire on the website. And so we ask them to the emotional during the film, the enjoyment during the film, their familiarity with the content of the film, and also the sense of presence or immersion during the film, and self-relevance with the film. And so we make a sort of regression to explain and predict emotion intensity during the film. And we show that enjoyment with the film, presence with the film, and self-relevance were significant predictors of emotion intensity during the film, but not familiarity with the film. So it could be interesting to discuss with Jérôme after that familiarity is like narrative content. And so perhaps it is not so much important to determine emotion in fiction. So I would like to thank you and to thank all the postdoc and doctorant who participate in this study, Marco Sperduti, Margherita Arcangeli, and Dominique Makowski. Thank you. So to Jérôme, you conclude?
Yes. How long? 10 minutes. Yes. So I will do some remarks on our stimuli first, and then on the claim, the quasi-personal view on emotion, on quasi-emotion. So first a note on our stimuli. So I'm referring to the first experiments which were presented, not the last one, with Avengers. So as you saw, due to experimental constraints, our stimuli were very short, silent clips, without sounds, and with no explicit narrative. Or, in the second experiment, there were fixed images. We choose to avoid, of course, stimuli which would be marked with signals of fictionality, like the presence of actors, for instance, or also with narrativity, or also with an aesthetic content. Signs of fictionality in our clips would have blocked the real condition presentation. It would have prevented the possibility to present the clips in the real condition. If subject had recognized actors, they would not have endorsed to view the clip as real. So we dismissed all cinematographical innovations developed by authors of cinematic fictions. So in our protocol, fiction is opposed to reality as two modalities of the same content. What is seen in the clip is either fictional or real, either invented content or real content. These modalities cannot be seen, cannot be detected by the viewer as such. They can only be inferred or knowledge-based. We present the clips as real or as fictional. So, of course, there are philosophical objections to the use of such stimuli. One of the objections is that there is no fictionality without narrative, and that our clips and photographs with a minimal or no narrative were not adapted to the task. Another objection would be that our stimuli were not complex enough to motivate what some researchers call interest, or what others call transportation into a narrative. Actually, yes, our stimuli had no transportive quality. That was a price to pay to do proper experimental work. I say that to the philosophers in the room, since our objective was to measure the emotional impact of the fictionality of the scene as such, relatively to the reality of the scene. So we had to deprive our stimuli of all the other dimensions, narrative and aesthetic in particular. It was enough for our experiments that subjects accept to treat the stimuli as depicting fictional or real events. A merely minimal awareness that these were fictional scenes or that these were real scenes were sufficient for the experiments. But as Pascal said, it will remain to measure the emotional impact of narrativity, the emotional impact of narrativity of on viewers of fictional content versus viewers of real content, in order to be in position to generalize our results to the experience, to the daily experience of cinematographic viewers of fictions. Now I end with some speculation about the quasi-personal claim, which was suggested in the talk. So we suggest that a plausible construal of quasi in quasi-emotion towards fiction is quasi-personal. So we keep the quasi-prefix and claim that a reader or viewer of fictional content is quasi-personally affected by fictional scenes, meaning by that he or she is so physiologically affected as a reader or viewer of fact, is not quasi-physiologically affected, but he or she, in some way, does not feel personally affected as a reader or a viewer of fact. Our data show that consumers of fictions succeed in manipulating their personal distance with the events, or what we call the personal relevance of the events on screen. And so one could speculate that the self-relevance of, for instance, of dangerous scenes, of dangerous objects, might be in real condition implicitly represented somehow in the in the bodily experience of fear, for instance. And so, as François was saying, so maybe he was not speaking about emotion, but as François was saying about perception and memory, so emotion is a reflexive state in that sense. So in the real conditions, there would be apparently an implicit representation of self-relevance. And in the context of fiction, somehow subjects manage to either diminish, to attenuate, or even to cancel this implicit representation of self-relevance. And actually to disentangle this implicit self-relevance, which is the case in the real condition, from what they felt during the viewing, from the emotion feel of the experience. So how? Probably via the knowledge that what is being experienced, what was being experienced, was fiction. And that, for instance, that there was no immediate danger for anybody in the scene. So even though real viewers and fiction viewers are emotional physiological duplicates of consumers of facts, they have a distinct emotional phenomenology than readers of viewers of facts. Same implicit arousal, but a different explicit or felt arousal of the emotion. There is a kind of decoupling between the brute physiological arousal impact of the scene, emotional impact of the scene, and its phenomenological impact in the fiction condition, a decoupling which enables the viewer to control his or her emotional experiences, and a decoupling which is related somehow on the psychological distance the reader or viewer has with the events depicted. So I believe a certain conception of emotion emerged from this, a view of the emotion process as a flexible process in which an emotional episode may be controlled online by the way one thinks of one's distance from the object of the emotion, one thinks of the personal relevance of the object of the emotion. And so we speak of a modulation of the felt dimension of the emotion. So this modulation of the feel of the emotion in the fiction condition, of course, is not voluntary. You cannot decide to feel in some way or in another way. So the modulation itself of the feel is not voluntary, but it is a result of an appraisal of the personal distance with the events. And this appraisal may be engaged in the fiction context by some kind of voluntary judgment. This is fiction. Or maybe triggered by, and become a belief during the process, a background belief. And probably in a real condition, this modulation of the feel of the emotion may be enacted voluntarily by a subject who for various reasons, doesn't want to feel the emotional experience as it should be felt in normal conditions. So it's not voluntarily modulated in the fiction condition. I think the context of the fiction viewing makes it possible that the modulation occurs, but we speculate that it might be the case that in the real conditions, this modulation might be engaged voluntarily. So what results from this is that Of course, emotions are hard to initiate voluntarily, but they are not so hard to control. And fiction viewing seems to be a very apt area to develop such a control on one's emotions. And that could be a functional, if there is something functional in fiction viewing, it could be something like this. The possibility of learning how to control one's emotion. And not the physiological part of it, which cannot be controlled, but at least the phenomenological part of it. So I end with just a consequence for psychology and for experiments in psychology, because in psychology one uses in lab video clips, to study cognition, to study perception, to study memory, to study emotion, and so on, to study inferences. And probably the subject responses to these clips may differ according the way they construe the events which are presented, if they construe the events as fictional or as real. And this is some worry one can have about experiments in psychology using clips without making clear whether subjects endorse a fictional construal of the content of the scene which was presented or a real one. So thank you very much. Thank you.